this fortnight's edition of Nerd and Tie, we go over convention madness. We talk about some changes coming to Marvel. The Arrowverse gets some new cast members. Harmony Gold does something not awful. Homestar Runner returns. And the Guardians of the Galaxy are coming back in all sorts of ways. Welcome to another Fortnite's edition of Nerd and Tie.
Woo-hoo! Yeah! We're back, baby!
It's so good to be back after a long hiatus.
That was either a really long Fortnite or a really short one. I can't tell.
It's like a happy in-between.
Fortnite and a half.
Hey, we gave people some pretty great content through a little walk down memory lane.
Yeah.
Reminded of things that I wanted to forget that I said.
By the way, Trey said we were eating pulled pork sandwiches. I specifically remember getting beef brisket in that Dickies.
Well, so, you got
brisket. Wrong about last week's episode, Trey.
I had pulled pork, and that's all that matters.
I think I also had pulled pork, so we got 2 out of 3.
Yeah, no, I think Krista had the brisket. And I think you had the brisket.
Yeah.
But Nick and I had the pulled pork. And beyond that, I didn't pay attention to what people ate.
In the event that you don't know, our group of intrepid hosts debating as to who had what initially is the brisket eating Professor Fur.
Exactly.
And defending the point of who was having pulled pork is Trey Dorn.
I pretend to be, at least.
That's what it says on his underpants. Not that I would know.
And proud of his pulled pork sandwich is still me, Nick Izumi.
And he did not get ocular dysentery.
I did not get ocular dysentery. Another great thing that the walk down memory lane reminded me of. Oh, okay.
And mouth AIDS.
Hey, speaking of terrible
how
things,
did I not get either one of those jokes into the best of episode?
Probably for the best, really.
I'm the one who got final edit. I could have just thrown those in, but I managed to totally not include those. What is wrong with me?
We'll never know.
Maybe you have AIDS. Anyway.
Ocular dysentery. Or mouth AIDS. Those are the two diseases. There is no eye AIDS. That would be weird.
Because ocular dysentery isn't.
It's fun to say, and it's an amusing visual.
No, wow. You have a very loose definition of amusing, Trey.
Well, speaking of awful things that could be amusing.
Oh, my God. Okay, so I don't know if y'all know this, but there's this website called Tumblr.
I've never heard of it.
Sometimes I post things on it.
Well, a few weeks ago, the first annual, and I use annual in large dramatic air quotes, DashCon occurred, which was a convention dedicated to Tumblr users, or as I like to call DashCon, a perfect storm of incompetence. You see, disaster cons happen. Cons go wrong all the time. Things fall apart. Guests get, you know, stiffed. Lots of stuff happens. But it's very rare that they so perfectly go wrong that the convention manages to actually continue throughout the weekend.
Somehow.
While both continuously escalating and proving how not to do things. So DashCon is an amazing thing. It is a true disaster con. It's the Midwest hasn't seen anything like this since KazeCon. It's amazing. It's not a simple concept. Let's make a Tumblr convention. Only that makes no sense whatsoever. because, you know, the fan, you know, it's really, it wasn't a Tumblr convention. It was a subset of fandoms that like to use Tumblr trying to create a convention, thinking that they represent the website as a whole, when actually the largest blogging subject on Tumblr is fashion, and there were a total of 2 panels on that subject in their entire schedule. So
no, but the fact that they even had anything on there, like, if you have, you do you read the panel schedule? Oh my god.
Yeah. So okay, so I have a couple of friends who are actually there.
Wasn't only a 500 person turnout?
I've heard varying numbers. I've heard anywhere from 300 to 1,000. I think 500 is probably a safe bet, but they haven't released anything official, and these are all estimations based on what people saw in the rooms. So it's really hard to say. So it was held in Schaumburg, Illinois, I think the 11th, 12th, and 13th. So originally it was going to be called TumbleCon USA. If you go to the history of the event, it was going to be called TumbleCon USA until Tumblr said, oh, wait, our legal department does not want you in any way to appear to be related to us, because Tumblr is run by smart people.
Not a bad idea.
And there are lots of reports from people who were involved in early organizational stuff that the whole thing was a mess to start with. They got their initial funds through an Indiegogo campaign that raised over $4,000. Which, you know what, if you can't run a con with $4,000 in your war chest to start with and not come out on top, I'm gonna tell you something. You don't know how to manage a con. I'm just saying
There's been stuff released about whether or not anyone was managing anything to begin with. Like,
well,
all one needs to do is like do a Google search on DashCon, and you see just how many things went horribly wrong.
Oh yeah,
long before anyone was even there.
Now, these guys were expecting like 3,000 attendees, which was a laughable goal, especially when their pre-reg cost for a first-year convention was $65. Now, if you're like Wizard World, you can charge $80 for a ticket because people know you're bringing in big names and, you know, it's X big. If you're running Gen Con, you can charge like $80 or $60 or whatever. If you are a 3-day con in that's never happened before, and there is no guarantee of attendance, $65 is an insane pre-reg cost, and it's gonna.
I will defend them a little bit on that cost though, because initially they had some pretty good guests lined up. I mean, at the very beginning, they had announced back in January that Steam Powered Giraffe, a steampunk band, was going to be there. And that, well, the Welcome to Night Vale guys were going to be stopping by. And not just one of the Welcome to Night Vale guys, but the entire team from Welcome to Night Vale was going to be there. So initially, it was a pretty good setup.
And also actor Doug Jones and a couple other people. But
they had a good guest lineup initially. So saying like, you know, I mean, these are pretty high-tier guests here.
And you know what? Steam Powered Giraffe canceled on them. You know, Welcome to Night Vale was there
for two hours.
Well, no, it's actually we'll get to that. But so what happened was, first off, on Friday night, like out of nowhere, the staff rounded up as many people as they could into the main hall and said that they had been given a bill from the convention for $20,000. They only had $3,000 on hand that they could pay. That the con was demanding all of their money be paid immediately, when the con said they believed they had till the end of the weekend, and that they needed to raise, you know, $17,000 that night. Now, a couple of things jump out at me. First off, they released the letter, which was almost entirely redacted except for one sentence, which makes no sense.
And it's a little suspect.
Secondly, there is no way that their hotel contract did not explicitly state when payment was due. I've heard someone propose that maybe it was due to an unsold room block, where, you know, if you are dumb enough to, on your first year convention, tell the hotel that you will pay for any unsold rooms, which you should. If you don't know for sure how many people are showing up, if you aren't guaranteed to sell out the hotel, let the hotel release the rooms early and don't make that promise. But, you know, that's just logic.
Yeah.
But anyways, so someone has proposed that that might be where the money, what the money was due for. But even that stipulation should be listed in the contract. So either these guys are either these guys didn't read their contract, or they were just lying and were behind on payments that were already previously due. And you know what? If you don't pay, if you've agreed, some hotels will require a convention to pay ahead of time. And if you've agreed to that and you don't make the payment, they kick you out. So, but here's the weird thing. Most of that money was raised, that $17,000 was raised via PayPal. That funding is not directly accessible. It can take a couple business days to release that. So how did paying $17,000 into a PayPal account
help right away?
Help right away. That is a concerned thing. Like, maybe they talked to the hotel into, like, you know, but look, we can, the money will be here, it's, and showed them or something. Like, maybe that's what happened, but so far there's been no official word, and none of this adds up. None of it. But I suspect incompetence. I expect more incompetence, though, than malice in this case.
True, but what do you want to bet me we're not going to hear where it went either? I mean...
Oh, no, we're not going to hear shit. Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
Honestly... My best guess is that, because I guess DashCon 2015 is a thing that's going to happen, my guess is that it's going entirely towards that.
Yeah. So it's all right. So, but well, I've got tons of problems with this. First off, like, even if you estimate, okay, so even if you mix in day badges with pre-reg, even if there were only 500 people there, they should have at least raised $25,000 just in admissions. And again, I have run cons for a lot less money than that. Of course, they were picking larger venues and places that really they couldn't fill because they didn't do the standard plan for less people showing up than you could ever imagine. And if they had the large number, 1,000 attendees, that some people have said, they should have had $50,000 acceptable. But, you know. Anyways, having saved the day... The next day rolled around, and Night Vale, okay, so Night Vale had been there on Friday, and they did a meet-and-greet panel, and everything was fine, but before they went and did the live show, they had an agreement that they were supposed to get paid, and with all the shenanigans the night before, Night Vale said, we don't believe you're going to be able to pay us, please pay us before we go on, because... You know, if you're a performer, that's what you do. You pay performers up front when you book them for a venue.
Unless it says something in their contract that they get paid afterwards.
Right, but that's the standard thing because of how many venues have historically stiffed performers and musicians. It's actually pretty standard to get paid ahead of time. You know... DashCon staff... Okay, so DashCon staff let the room fill up with attendees... And didn't communicate anything while the attendees waited for this Welcome to Night Vale live show that didn't end up happening. There was no communication for over an hour as attendees sat there. And then after Night Vale walked because there was DashCon could not pay them. And I do not blame Night Vale for doing this. Frankly,
who
you know,
would? I'm
right.
It's well, just. Awful to exploit artists. That kind of thing really tees me up.
These guys are professionals, and you made a promise, and they didn't fulfill the promise, and so fuck them. Anyways, so after this room full of attendees been waiting for over an hour, and there's a video of this on YouTube. A DashCon staffer comes out, and like the most awkward way, like, if you could say, like, the one of the worst ways to, like, tell a group of people that whoever they're, like, that whoever they're waiting for isn't going to show up, they did it. They, like, the worst way. So it's like, we're all going to take a breath, and we're all going to breathe in deep together, and then let it out, and, like, And this whole weird kind of, like, you go into your formal apology immediately. Like, you don't do some, like, we're not buddies, we're not friends, you know, you're a room full of paid attendees, we are your customers, you just broke a promise, you need to go straight into an apology, not trying to make jokes. So, anyways, people who had paid, because you had to pay extra to go to the Night Vale show, were then told that they could, this is, literally get an extra hour in the ball pit.
Which is my favorite thing to ever come out of a convention.
Now, if you have seen, tell me you, if you just Google DashCon ball pit to see this ball pit, which is like.
You just Google DashCon. That is the symbol of on now.
It's the sad little ball pit sitting in the room. And by the way, while at that point they had started charging people to spend time in the ball pit, prior to that it had been free. So so it was after this that, like, the Baker Street Babes, who do a podcast, like, they walked after they completed their panels. Like, you know, they completed their obligation and then they just left. And then it took, like, several days for some of the guests to have their hotel rooms paid for, as in the guests had to pay the bill themselves and then get reimbursed. And some of them didn't get reimbursed until they actually threatened the convention. And it's just, oh my God. This.
Incredible.
And these are just the highlights, folks. So yeah, DashCon. Really?
You call them highlights, more like lowlights. I mean, they're definitely lights, but
I'm looking forward to DashCon 2015 in Indianapolis.
I want to try to get there, honestly.
I'm just saying, Nerd and Tie, if it happens, Nerd and Tie will be there in one way, shape, or another, because that is only an hour away from where I live.
And honestly, I could probably, in a year's time, swing a trip to Indiana to go there. There's no other summer conventions happening.
We are going to do this. Nerd and Ty, if DashCon 2015 occurs, Nerd and Ty will be there. And we will be ready.
Well, we're ready for it. I'm excited. And excited in the same way that, you know, going in for an invasive medical exam is exciting.
Yeah, if you want more details about DashCon, go to the webs. Go to nerdandtie.com, and we posted an article about this a couple weeks ago. So if you search for DashCon in the little search bar, you can pull up the piece I wrote on it. And it's a thing. It happened.
It was for sure there. Of course, that's not the only convention-related
really?
Thing.
Really?
That happened over the 3 weeks. The big story, sort of from in this neck of the woods, that's shaking things up. Trey, a few weeks ago, you received an email from AwesomeCon, which takes place in Washington, D.C. every year, and it's quite a large convention. They get quite a few big name guests, announcing that they were going to be taking place in Milwaukee, November 21st through the 23rd.
And also, an Indianapolis show. Shows just dumb to open up another show in Indianapolis when it's straining to support the shows that are there already.
Now, Trey, you sent me this email initially, and it was sort of one of these, like, I thought you were sending it to me, like, I'm going to go to this, because they were inviting you to go apply as a vendor. I was like, oh, that good for you. And then you kind of had one of those double check the dates thing, and then it slowly dawned on me, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
DaishoCon is happening that same weekend.
Right. Now,
there's a lot of,
you know,
that
convention that Nick co-founded.
We love DaishoCon here at Nerd and Tie. We love going to that convention. It's a lot of fun.
We did a great live show there this last year, and we loved seeing you guys there.
It was phenomenal.
The home listeners.
It was our first live show.
It was our very first one, which was exciting. But everything sort of started to snowball from there. Trey wrote an article basically calling out AwesomeCon for being terrible in regards to this.
I was angry.
Which is
when I'm at my funniest, but not necessarily my nicest or fairest.
Now, because one of us has to be level-headed here.
One of us was a conflict of interest and couldn't write about it.
That left us with Fur, and Fur being the level-headed one is usually a scary thing, but in this case it worked.
Because normally I'm the one that stumbles into our live shows and then gets up to go to the bathroom halfway through a discussion about
Transformers. Nick is supposed to be the level-headed one, but he couldn't talk about this.
Now, the email that we got initially from AwesomeCon was a big sort of to-do, hey, welcome to the convention, we're going to do all this, we've got these guests. They have a website, they have all this stuff. They are taking place in Milwaukee, but I did a little bit of research into this, reached out to AwesomeCon to get a statement, because as soon as this hit, a lot of reaction happened from the Wisconsin Con scene. Some of it a little bit more calm than others.
East Coast people don't get Wisconsin.
No, no. Which makes sense.
They don't get the Midwest in general, because the reactions I've seen from people who work conventions on the East Coast have been vastly different from reactions I've gotten from people who run conventions in, say, like Nebraska. You know, so yeah.
Which makes sense, because each region in the United States really does have its own culture that that you really have to take time to get used to and study to really understand. I mean, you can cross the border from Wisconsin into Minnesota and find some things in Minnesota that you're never going to find in Wisconsin and vice versa. Mostly it has to do with beer and cheese and whatnot. But
better con suites in Minnesota.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. But I reached out to get to the bottom of this, to find out what went into this. And what I got back from one Mr. Ben Penrod, the president of AwesomeCon, was that they thought they had done enough research. However, they apparently did not. And they wanted to clear up that November 21st through the 23rd is the only weekend they could get from the Wisconsin Center. Pretty good. Pretty good statement. You know, whatever. Sort of feels like their hands tied. Unfortunately, a lot of that seemed really fishy. So through a little bit of investigating, I found that turns out the Wisconsin Center is quite open.
We thought, hey, we know somebody who runs a convention at the Wisconsin Center.
The head of Anime Milwaukee, Corey Wood, who I will name because he did say that we could use his name during the article and whatnot, so why not use it here? Basically saying that the Wisconsin Center is actually really easy to negotiate with and helpful for date finding. And that he has a hard time believing that the Wisconsin Center basically just said, no, sorry, these are the dates you get, and you're not getting any other dates.
Well, it's the guy from AwesomeCon claimed that they, like, gave the Wisconsin Center almost an entire year's worth of dates, and that doesn't make any sense to me then, because there are plenty of available weekends.
Which you can find just by going to the Wisconsin Center's website and looking at the calendar.
It's amazing!
Another easy thing to do is it's also easy to find other Wisconsin convention dates simply by typing in Wisconsin convention dates on the internet, and you literally get the third result. You know, within the top five results, you get about three or four sites that have DaishoCon's dates being November 21st to the 23rd, 2014, almost immediately.
Stop. That's what my search engine has been for this whole time?
For researching things, right?
Okay, so I'm going to say one thing in their defense. And this is, I think it comes from, they're coming from Washington, D.C. There's a much higher population density all along the East Coast. So when you have conflicting events that are near each other, that are the same distance as, like, say, the Dells from Milwaukee geographically, you've got a much higher amount of population between those two spaces. So when people run events that close to each other on the East Coast on the same weekend, they don't see the same attendance hits that what happens in a place like Wisconsin. Now, you get to the Midwest, where there's much lower population density, you get farmland and emptiness. You know, we don't have Baltimore just down the street. We do have Chicago, but Chicago does not go north to Wisconsin. I know I'm from Chicago.
No, and that's the thing, too, is that driving through Wisconsin, I mean, when I'm driving down to Milwaukee, for example, I'll be like, oh, okay, I made it to Osseo. I only need to drive another 35, 40 minutes, and I'm in Tacoma. Oh, I've got another hour to go, and then I'm in the Dells. Okay, we're only an hour away from Madison now, and there's literally nothing in between them.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
there is nothing.
Baraboo?
You're going to get a couple of small-town gas stations off the side of the highway for everybody, you know, people to stop in and rest, but there is literally nobody in between those cities.
Yeah, it's... So, I mean, it's true. It's not as bad as, like, if you drive really out west to, like, you know, western Nebraska and eastern Colorado, where there really is no one. But it's still, like, The Wisconsin con scene is all driven by regional. DaishoCon is a destination convention. Even the staff doesn't live in Wisconsin Dells.
No, they all drive an hour and a half from Stevens Point, the Wausau area, and whatnot to get to
their own convention. So,
which, to be fair, is of no fault of their own because initially they didn't have that far to drive to begin with.
Yeah, but it's okay. So I mean,
I walked to DaishoCon.
So yeah, it's so my point is that they came at this knowing, not really understanding how conventions in the Midwest outside of Chicago work, because What I love is in their original email to me. They predicted that they would have 20,000 attendees at their Milwaukee event. Allow me to explain to you why that's not going to happen, and if it does happen, it's not a good thing. Now, they could get 10,000 attendees, 15,000 attendees, be a huge, massive success, and be fine. But Milwaukee used to have this convention called Gen Con in it. I don't know if you've maybe heard of it. Gen Con left Milwaukee because they were getting too big for the convention center and the surrounding.
How big was too big?
Oh, about 20,000.
Oh, okay.
So it's their last year there, they had 23,000 attendees. Gen Con now has close to 50,000 attendees in Indianapolis. So it's the Indianapolis venue, 20,000, I think, is not going to happen, but at least can support that if they do pull that off. The Milwaukee, the amount of hotel space in Milwaukee is really not that high. One of the reasons why Gen Con left is because really there was no hotel space left in Milwaukee. And it's not. And so if they really hit their first year number that they think they're going to hit in Milwaukee, they are literally going to be straining their facilities to the point of mismanagement. One of two things is happening here. Either one, they really aren't planning for 20,000, which I think is the more realistic scenario, where they just but that means they're puffing up a fake number to vendors and artists who they're trying to attract to sell there. And that, to me, is a level of dishonest you never do. You always underestimate to vendors and artists, because if fewer people show up than the number you promised people who are, like, this is their living, it tells me everything I need to know about your organization. Or they're incompetent and don't know the market well enough to understand that, yes, Wizard World Chicago, you know, an hour south of Milwaukee might do, you know, 80,000 people, but people from Milwaukee drive to Chicago, but people from Chicago don't drive to Milwaukee. This is simple. People go to Chicago, they don't come from Chicago, because if you live in Chicago, you don't need to go to Awesome Con, Milwaukee, because you got Wizard World, you've got ASEN,
you got everything.
No, I hate saying it, but I really do think the numbers thing might just be them not knowing the territory. I think they just don't understand how it works, like you were saying.
And I want to be clear. They could be massively successful, get 10,000 attendees, and knock it out of the park.
But none of those people are going to be people that were going to be going to DaishoCon. Honestly, what you're going to see is you're going to see all of those attendees come from Milwaukee.
I think the only reason this hurts DaishoCon, this doesn't hurt them to be on the Civic Games DaishoCon, but it hurts DaishoCon, and I'll tell you why. Now, DaishoCon has, 2,200 attendees? 2,500?
I think they had 2,200 last year.
Okay, we'll gauge anywhere from 2,000 to 2,500 is the expected number this year, right? That's a good ballpark.
Yeah.
Both low and high. Now, out of those attendees, there's a dedicated fan base that's going no matter what, all right? And it's also going to include people coming from the cities. It's going to include a lot of the rural areas who come from north of the Dells, where it's a shorter trip to go to the Dells than to Milwaukee. Now, there is, though, a crossover audience. Not everybody at DaishoCon is there because it's an anime convention, but there's a large gaming contingent, there's a large video gaming contingent, and there are people who just want to go to any convention they can find.
Because they're fun.
Yeah, and that, but that, if you add up all of those groups, that is literally probably about half the people there. Maybe a little less, maybe 40%. And what happens is, though, is that those people end up possibly, unless they've got loyalty to the convention in general, which is possible because, frankly, DaishoCon is one of those events in Wisconsin that has developed a personality, and people feel loyalty towards the nonprofit cons in Wisconsin. They just do. But those people are potentially split between the events, which if AwesomeCon doesn't get those people, AwesomeCon will be fine. But if DaishoCon doesn't get those people, that's expected attendance that could actually potentially hurt them. And so that's why I get angry. That's why I get annoyed with AwesomeCon being over there is because, you know, when you're an event the size of DaishoCon, 500 people makes a difference if they don't show up.
Yeah, exactly. But what I found to kind of close it up so we can move on to the next subject, what I basically found is that I don't think AwesomeCon was intending to be malicious. They just weren't. It's not in their nature. I don't think it's in their nature. At least that's not the vibe that I got from their president when I talked to him. They just did a piss poor job of researching. And I think if AwesomeCon 2016 happens in Milwaukee, I think the research is going to, you know, that their con dates are going to be off of the other cons. I think it's going to be a little bit better researched. And honestly, I hope they do well. Without taking away Daisho's numbers, and I hope that next year when they're in Wisconsin, they can maybe research a little bit better and maybe potentially, if not necessarily, work with the local conventions. But
the convention stuff is going really weird in Wisconsin right now because with AwesomeCon coming in early next year, the Wizard World Wisconsin in Madison
is happening about a month ahead of Anime Milwaukee.
Yeah, and then finally, now there's this other convention called Fantasticon that's going to be in October in Milwaukee. This is their first year. And they're looking to be like a science fiction convention. The Fantasticon guys, though, first off, besides them sending out flyers that said Milwaukee finally gets its own convention, kind of ignoring that there have been plenty of conventions in Milwaukee over the last several decades, including Gen Con. Some of the Fantasticon guys, I actually was talking to someone who had been gotten a message from the Fantasticon guys saying, don't go to AwesomeCon, and like making a bunch of references about them being like Patriots fans and like a bunch of like pretty much almost like anti-East Coast xenophobic stuff. And I'm like, I was thinking about going to Fantasticon until I found that out. Because, you know, Wisconsin, we're supposed to be about cooperation and working together. And if AwesomeCon, now while I'm annoyed with what AwesomeCon had done, I'm annoyed with what they've done, we shouldn't be mad at them because they're an outside group bringing in an event that's different from anything that's here right now. And by making remarks about outsiders doesn't really
help our case
then. Help anybody. It doesn't help anyone. So AwesomeCon may be a little bit of a juggernaut, but they are an upstart. These guys are like, these are their Indianapolis and Milwaukee shows are like their first wave of expansion off of their DC convention. So it's not like their Wizard World.
I'm just getting a little worried just by how many conventions there are in this area. I'm hoping that they can all still thrive.
Yeah, I think that there's an importance that Wisconsin's been in this blessed period for a decade of almost exclusively nonprofit events. And these are the first AwesomeCon and Wizard World Wisconsin are the first big for-profit events that have tried to move into the territory in a very, very, very long time. So what happens next is I think the nonprofit conventions need to band together and work together more closely. But that's just my opinion. Speaking of a small nonprofit convention
that
in Milwaukee that needs help, NozomiCon is attempting to raise money for their NozomiCon 2015. Now, NozomiCon I've talked about on the show before.
You've sold there, haven't you, Trey?
Yeah, the cons run for 3 years so far. I've been there at two of them, the most recent two. So I wasn't at the first one, but I was at NozomiCon 2 and 3. I've vended there every year.
Everyone was better anyway. Heath Ledger was in it.
God damn it. Anyways, It's they're a good bunch of kids, and it was started at Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design, MIAD in downtown Milwaukee, and it's run by a bunch of really really nice people, and they're looking to spin off of their college, and you know move into a better venue than the third floor of that building, which is a unique location. To say the least. And so they have launched an Indiegogo campaign, which I'll include in the show notes, a link to that, to help fund their 2015 convention. And they're trying to raise $4,500, but they only have gotten up to 225 right now, but there's 38 days left on the Indiegogo campaign. What they want to do is run an event in January, which is when they have been, but they want to try to run two events in 2015 if they can raise the money. And that is, they want to move to a fall convention eventually. Because, frankly, they're, you know, within such proximity to Anime Milwaukee, it would be silly. Long term,
that makes sense.
But yeah, no, it's they're really good people. It's a great little con, and if you can help these guys raise, you know, get their goal, or at least close. I mean, it's Indiegogo; they're going to get some of this money no matter what. It's not like a Kickstarter, but you know, these guys need help, and I think it's important to help them. I put my money in. Why haven't you?
I should really go do something like that. Well, at least we got to close on a happy note for the con scene. Well, a happy-ish note. Hopeful.
Hopeful. Yeah. Hopeful. Good people trying to run a good con. And yeah.
Well, I can live with that. Hey, speaking of hopeful things and kind of shaking up the status quo, why don't we move over to some... more wide nerd stuff, like Marvel Comics.
What, just because we spent like a half hour talking about conventions?
Yeah, something like that. We did. Well, let's move on to the Marvel world, because Marvel has made some pretty intense announcements in these last week. Specifically, that our two of our big gun Avengers are going to be replaced in the comics with a bit of diversity. Firstly, I get the character we've known as Thor has lost the right to hold the hammer Mjolnir and no longer holds the right to being Thor, and it is going to a new female Thor.
And the most confusing thing ever. Oh, just confusing. I'll let you finish before I comment.
No, I mean, the character design was released, but yeah, it is kind of confusing, like, what's going on there, because the dude who we've known as Thor is still going to exist in the Marvel Universe. He's just not going to be Thor, I guess.
Well, you know, it's like getting fired from your job and being told, well, Steve, you're fired, and also you can't be called Steve anymore.
Yep.
This is new Steve. You know, that's always the frustrating thing, because it's not like it's like Thor's not just a mantle. It's the guy's actual name, you know, and they've split off that other personality, like Secret Identity used to have, into a different character now. So he can't go back to being that.
Yeah, that's I really don't know what to make of that.
What are they going to call him?
Homeless Asgardian.
They'll call him Steve? I don't know.
The hero formerly known as Thor.
Get a symbol. Oh, wait, no, Thor's symbol is his hammer. He doesn't have that anymore. All right. Well, he's going to be wielding his old axe, which is fine, and still trying to be a hero, but, like, that's the only reason why that's why I think this is kind of like, that's how you know it's impermanent. Like, if Thor got physically transformed into a woman where it was the same character, you could see that sticking around. If the new character got Mjolnir and had a different name, you could see her sticking around. But what we're going to get is
a filler.
Yeah, and so that's why I'm disappointed. I think it's great to have more women headline characters. I just wish that they had done this in a way where it would have, been more, you know, because it would be really interesting to have a Thor story where he gets transformed into a woman a la Earth X, because that would actually make him a transgendered hero.
Yeah,
we could have gone a really interesting direction with that and told a lot of really cool stories. Instead, we're just getting some woman is going to take his name, which is fine, I guess. It's just weird.
I'm honestly not as excited for that bit of news as I am for the other bit of Marvel news we have, which I think is actually really awesome.
Well, you should talk about it.
Well, some of you might remember when we did our best of last year, the comic book I mentioned that really blew me away was Rick Remender's Captain America run. And Remender is continuing to shake up the status quo. Good old Steve Rogers has lost the super soldier serum again. This time he is actually aged, so he looks like he's 90-something. So we need a new Captain America. Who better to fill in? But Sam Wilson.
Yay! Oh. I'm excited.
Yes,
about
a black
that.
Captain America and the Falcon, no less, who, let's face it, especially after Winter Soldier, he's a favorite right now.
People
he's a great hero.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always enjoyed the Falcon. And having him step up as the new Captain America. That's really cool.
It is. And my hope is that he keeps the wings.
It looks like the designs that they've released have shown him with wings on over the...
Yes! Design.
Well, it's funny because, like, back in the 70s, you had a couple of weird Captain America stories where Cap faked being dead. And then there was also when Cap gave up being Cap and became Nomad, the man with no country. And they just kind of followed the Falcon around, still being the Falcon. And I like that this is going to be straight up, nope, someone needs to be Captain America, might as well be Sam Wilson.
And Falcon's awesome, so. Well, he's also a really high visibility character with Captain America 2 to the public, so.
Well, the other cool thing that you get that's going to change up the status quo a lot is that Captain America and most of the people who have worn that mantle outside of just Steve Rogers have had a military background. And in the comics, Sam doesn't have that. He's a social worker. So I think it's going to give a very different take on what it means to be Captain America. And I'm very excited for that.
Yep, and he'll stick around just as long as U.S. Agent did.
I was about to say, tragically, yeah, we know. It's just like, I loved the Bucky as Captain America run, but that ended, so no doubt this probably won't last that long either. But
That one might have stuck around if Steve hadn't come back from the dead.
And Steve might not have come back from the dead if it weren't for Disney wanting to have... the Captain America from the movie that they were about to release in the comics.
Very true.
Oh, the funny ins and outs of comics. It's like Spider-Man putting the black suit back on when Spider-Man 3 came out.
You know, I'd stopped buying the Spider-Man comics at that point, so I didn't realize they even did that.
Yeah, that happened.
That's stupid.
Iron Patriot has his own book right now, etc.
Well, you know what, what's really interesting, just to touch on it briefly, is that the new S.H.I.E.L.D. comic coming out, which is going to import all the characters from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. into the comics universe.
Hey, not going to say called it, but remember when we first discussed Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on the show, I was like, a year from now, they're going to be in the comics. But
well,
I called it.
Coulson already was. Coulson already showed up because he was so popular. But this is going to be Melinda May and Fitz and Simmons, like, debuts. And it's going to be written by Mark Waid, and who is awesome, and wrote some of my favorite comics ever. And also shares the name with a guy I went to high school with, but it's a very different Mark Waid. and it's going to have a rotating artist where they're only going to, each artist is only going to stick around for like two issues.
Huh.
That could be a good or bad thing.
That'll be interesting.
Well, I don't know. It means don't buy the issues when they have Greg Land work on it, you know. Oh, poor Spider-Woman. Oh.
Well, nevertheless, it's going to be interesting seeing where Marvel goes. It's too bad that it's almost for certain both of these are going to be temporary changes, but eh.
It's something.
At least Falcon America will be great.
Yeah.
I'm calling it right now. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I've been calling him Falcon America pretty much ever since I heard it.
All right, well, I guess we can move on to the live action DC that doesn't make everyone sad.
The only one.
Well, there will be two soon.
TV now.
Can we take a moment to pause and consider the fact that people in general are more excited for the CW version of the live action DC universe than they are for Zack Snyder's? Because I find that funny.
Yeah, I can't say I blame anybody.
That's just realness, man.
So the I guess what Trey has called the Arrowverse in our little notes here is expanding out to even more heroes and villains this season.
Well, with Constantine and Gotham coming on, I don't want to call it the TV-verse.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah. Since Flash and Arrow are going to be in the same continuity, it only makes sense to call it the Arrowverse, I guess, since that's what started it all.
And because CW-verse sounds stupid.
That and CW has had their try at DC before, and well, we've already talked about that.
I like Smallville.
Yes, but does anyone like Birds of Prey?
I did.
Oh,
but we had really okay. You have to remember what year it was when that came on. All right, let's be fair. We all had lower standards when Birds of Prey came on because we were not getting a lot of superhero stuff. We were happy to get any kind of, like, this is in a world where Batman Begins was, like, only a possibility about some people debating making a year one adaptation. Like, we were left with a Batman franchise that had been abandoned with the last Schumacher film. So, we took what we could get. We took
tonight's
what
episode,
we could
Trey
get.
Ardently defends Birds of Prey. But hey, but look, speaking speaking of the era of not having the same standards for comic book movies, I was happy to hear my favorite live action Superman is joining the Arrow cast.
But not a Superman.
Yeah. Well, it's not as Superman, but yes. Superman Returns' Brandon Routh will be playing Dr. Palmer, a.k.a. the Atom.
Woohoo! Oh, yeah. Routh is still relevant.
You know, and
he was also the best villain on Chuck.
Yeah, that's right. He showed up on Chuck for a little bit.
Yeah, no, he was a regular character for one of the seasons.
He was good. What has
I'm
he been in that's been bad?
The Atom, because that's he's got some... I mean, the shrinking power could be interesting to see how they handle it, but...
Tiny Routh! I got a Routh in my pocket.
Is that
Brandon Routh in your pocket? Are you happy to see me?
I just, you know, I could kind of maybe see them setting up their own version of the Infinite Crisis happening. Because they're introducing, you know, we're getting a Flash TV series, and now we're getting a... We're getting, you know, the Atom in there, and I don't know. Maybe DC is gonna show the Infinite Crisis at some point.
We're gonna get the B-list Justice League. We're gonna get the whole Justice League except for the Trinity.
I was about to say, yeah, we'll get like Flash is probably going to be the highest like on the A to B listers that you could get.
Yeah, I give about. I'll give you like a 30% chance that we'll see a Hal Jordan.
Some kind of Green Lantern.
Right, right. Well, maybe they'd go John Stewart just so they wouldn't conflict with the Green Lantern in the movie verse. But they're doing Barry Allen for The Flash, so I don't know.
Well, I'm still curious if they're going to try to work in, like, even, like, not Batman, but maybe, like, Nightwing or something, just out of the fact that they keep going with Batman villains, and the new teaser is hinting at Ra's al Ghul.
To be fair, it's because while Green Arrow is an interesting character on his own, he does not have an interesting rogues gallery.
No, his villain set's not the greatest in the world.
I was about to say, he's got...
Unless you want to take on Stanley and his monster, I speak of the Green Arrow revival that Kevin Smith did about a decade ago, where he also revived Stanley and his monster, which Google Stanley and his monster. It started out as a kid's comic, got turned into a Dark Vertigo book, and then became a Arrow villain. It's very complicated.
Before
that whole storyline's so weird.
Before I move on to the Flash stuff, though, I do also want to say that, finding out that
Ray Romano
Arsenal.
Hey,
no, Ray Liotta.
I suddenly can't remember the name of Roy Harper.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
Finding out that Roy Harper is actually going to have a costume and be Arsenal next season is very exciting.
And Arsenal's costume looks cooler than Green Arrow's costume.
It does, and I haven't even seen season two yet.
Well, we posted the costume to nerdandtie.com last week. You know, because this last week, you know, for where Nick posted articles, I posted articles, even though I was on a lake, but I don't know if you remembered we had a website.
I forgot briefly. Life happens, man.
Or does
it? No, but I think Arrow's headed in an interesting direction, especially with hints at Ra's al Ghul finally showing up, despite the fact that no one can pronounce his name.
Maybe,
you know,
he'll be Arabic this time.
Maybe. They haven't announced who's playing him yet, so.
It'd be really great to not have a white guy or an Asian guy playing Ra's al Ghul. And that happened in the same movie.
It's true.
I mean,
tragic.
Seriously.
And they couldn't put his name in that one either.
No. Raish. It's Raish, for God's sakes, people. It means the demon's hand.
Well, let's move on, you know.
To the Flash.
I would say for your resident.
Oh, wrong Flash.
No, they we've gotten some casting announcements for the new Flash series, which is going to be premiering this September, which I'm extremely excited about and is the one reason that I'm upset that I got rid of cable. But I'll still find a way to watch the show.
It goes on Hulu.
It does.
Well, it's on Hulu the week after it airs.
So I'll be right along with everybody.
Or the day after it airs if it's Hulu Plus.
Which I might have to get. But the first casting announcement that happened was that Robbie Amell is going to be in The Flash. Robbie Amell, of course, is the cousin of Stephen Amell, who plays Oliver Queen in Arrow. Yeah, no, nepotism, right. But no, it was announced that Robbie Amell is going to be joining the cast of The Flash TV series as Firestorm, as the Ronnie Raymond version of Firestorm. No idea if he's going to just be Ronnie Raymond or if he's going to be fused with somebody else, because that was the whole point of Firestorm at the very beginning, was that he couldn't be Firestorm without Martin Stein. But you never know.
I don't know. There's been multiple versions. Also, I think he's got to be Ray Romano. Robert!
Robert!
They're going like full on into superpowers now that Flash has started. They're just like, whatever, superpowers everywhere.
Well, they'll just start out the superpowered characters in Flash and then have the non-superpowered characters in Arrow, and it'll be like Batman comics versus Superman comics, where for some reason superpowered villains don't decide to go drive the 2 hours to Gotham.
Yeah, no, it'll be
or walk or fly, I guess.
But so we're getting Firestorm, so that's pretty cool. Firestorm's a pretty – you're right. We might be getting a B-list Justice League here. But
because we've already had Green Arrow, we've had Flash, we've had Black Canary, we've had Huntress,
Arsenal's there.
Arsenal's there. We're gonna have Firestorm. We're gonna have Atom. I mean, we're building out the roster, and some of those, like, you know, Flash and Black Canary are pretty high-level, like, high-profile team members. I mean, true, with Black Canary, it's traditionally only been thrown on the team when the Wonder Woman wasn't available. But, you know, she's at least the other woman on the team.
Yeah.
We'll take it.
We'll take it. It'll be good. But, so Firestorm's happening. And then the one that I'm really excited about, because it's just adding more to the Rogue Gallery, the Flash's Rogue Gallery, which I argue is one of the greatest sets of supervillains of all time.
Or worst, Wentworth, depending on how you look at it.
Or, no. I go best, because, like, they can be so bad they're good sometimes. Prison Break star Wentworth Miller, who was the lead on Prison Break for the 5 seasons, I believe it was, that show was on.
We broke out of prison. Now we have to break back into prison, and now we have to break back out of that prison we broke into. That's the plot.
Illusions, Michael. That's how that show went.
That's the actual plot of Prison Break. Yep,
pretty much. But Wentworth Miller has been cast as Captain Cold, one of the Flash's Rogue Gallery members, which, let's count for a second. Okay, we've got... we got Captain Cold, confirmed Captain Cold, who's a member of the Rogue Gallery. We're pretty sure that that's Weather Wizard in the first episode, or at least the trailer that might show the overarching story of season one.
Killer Frost, we might have.
We're getting the entire Rogue Gallery here, or at least one can only hope, because of course Rogue Gallery has villains like Mirror Master, who's my favorite Rogue Gallery member.
And I hope my favorite Captain Boomerang shows up, because I love me some Captain Boomerang.
There's all sorts of Australian actors looking for work out there.
There's a theme here of captains and cold stuff, isn't there?
A little bit.
Well, that was one of the funnier points at the beginning of the Flashpoint Paradox movie is when the Flash is attacked by the Rogues, he's like, "Oh, look, both the captains made it today."
they're not well named. Like, it's like somebody in middle school is like, "I'm going to have a bad guy. His superpower is cold, and he's going to be called Captain Cold."
Well, isn't that the same kind of thinking that says... It's not the very thinking, though, that gets you a superhero where I've got to make a superhero. He can just run really fast.
Yeah. I'll call him
Fast Guy.
And this guy this guy has a heat gun. I'm going to call him Heat Wave. This guy controls mirrors. He's Mirror Master.
Can I just say, when he said heat gun with Heat Wave, what I pictured in my head was, have you ever, like, used a shrink wrap machine?
Oh, yeah, I have a burn on my arm from one.
Like the heat guns you use to like shrink it? That's what I imagine someone attempting to attack Flash with. Like, I'm going to give you a really bad circular burn. Hold still. This cord only goes so far.
But, so Rogue Gallery is building up. I mean, we might also see Trickster.
Caught me again, Flash.
Yeah, that's the greatest. You know, that just goes to show how great the Rogue Gallery is. The Flash doesn't have to do anything. They're like, whatever.
That's not great.
Always make the Rogue Gallery the best, though. That's my biggest problem, is that all of the animated versions of the Rogues are so fun that the TV version won't be nearly as awesome as the versions that I've come to love.
Well, there's no way you can have a serious Trickster. Like, if the Trickster shows up, there's no way they're going to be able to play a guy named Captain Boomerang straight. I mean, there's no way that Captain Boomerang is going to hold Central City hostage over the course of 5 weeks. I mean, that's...
You know, I don't know anything about Captain Boomerang's powers, but I'm assuming he just throws a boomerang, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
He throws several boomerangs.
Boomerangs.
He's a little bit faster than everybody else. Yeah.
And I think he has some sort of beef with Deadshot for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know. It's they're an amazing group of supervillains, and I'm really excited that they're making their way to the screen. So yeah, that's our Marvel casting or our DC Marvel and DC updates for you.
Way to save it.
Yeah, no, I did what I can. Did you see that? I started off by tripping over my own words, but that's called live radio, folks.
You know, we should talk about something else. I think we should let Nick talk about Harmony Gold.
We should, because we still have a lot of show to get through.
Oh my God!
So not too long ago, we talked about Harmony Gold, and they're still hilariously failing Kickstarter for Robotech Academy. And why supporting them is a terrible thing to do. Today, we are going to just look at something really quick, though, where they might be doing something good. Harmony Gold has announced that they are going to be re-releasing Robotech for the umpteenth time. But this version is going to actually include the original Super Dimension Fortress Macross with it. Yay!
Should we be cheering, Nick?
Yeah, you should be cheering.
Woo!
Now, I'm the sets are pants!
Woo! Now, the sets are going to be like $20 each, and they're going to be an Amazon.com exclusive filled to order. And the Amazon site says it's going to be on DVDRs, so I'm not expecting a super high-quality product.
Wait.
From Harmony Gold?
Harmony Gold is literally doing a release on DVDRs. Like, the things I could be burning myself right now.
Pretty much. But at least it's a legal version of Macross.
What? It's like a Create Space release?
I guess it's like a fill to order. Like, they're not going to make this a regular in-stores kind of thing.
They're doing a print-on-demand. They're using CreateSpace's DVD. I'm sorry, Harmony Gold is literally using the same service that I self-publish my graphic novels under.
Yeah, they are.
Harmony Gold has sunk to my level.
Trey, Harmony Gold is begging people for money to make a 24-minute cartoon right now. This isn't surprising at all.
Shit, man, just sell some posters. You'll make that money back in a day. Just put out a poster with a Valkyrie on it. License it. Don't put Robotech or Macross on it. Everybody will buy it. Fill your coffers. There we go. Let Hasbro license the Valkyrie design for a bunch of toys, and suddenly for the Transformers fans will eat that crap up and make a bundle of money. Like, there's 20 things that they could be doing to, like, be raking in the cash that doesn't involve suing people or Kickstarters.
Yeah, well, Hasbro's already running a victory lap. Their 30th anniversary Jetfire figure looks like a Valkyrie. I don't even think they care.
No, they don't.
I don't even think they care.
It doesn't help that the Valkyrie's jet mode is based off of a real plane.
Yeah, well, anyway, I guess it's nice to see Harmony Gold doing something not awful, but it's still hilarious and pathetic, just like their Kickstarter that has 9 days to go and still isn't two-fifths of the way there.
There is good in this world.
And you know what? You know what, folks? If you were thinking about donating to Harmony Gold's Kickstarter, please consider donating to Nozomi-Kun's Indiegogo campaign instead.
It's a better use of your money.
It'll actually probably go somewhere, too.
That's the thing that'll happen.
Because Robotech Academy sure as hell won't.
I don't understand why Harmony Gold couldn't get the financial backing independently, why they had to go to Kickstarter. It makes no sense.
Because they're trying to make a sequel to a cartoon from the 80s that no one cares about anymore.
Yeah, but you think a bank would help them? Like, how bad is your company where you can't get any sort of financing? You can't even get a loan.
Part of it's a Google search. If you look up Harmony Gold, all that you will find is re-releasing Robotech and suing people. They're just not a reliable company. I wouldn't give them a loan.
They should re-release the novels.
I think they did that, but only as ebooks. So, wah, wah.
They should put them out in CreateSpace, print on demand. Actually, that's a really good idea. You know, they're already doing this with the DVDs, with DVD-Rs, but at least if you do the print-on-demand books, you're getting the same quality as a regular print run. Harmony Gold, put out the Robotech novels in print.
Mm.
Do it.
Trey, you're hired.
They are good books. They're worth a read.
If I can do it, y'all can do it. If I can make sales on Amazon of my crappy graphic novels, I mean wonderful graphic novels that are artfully put together and tell a very dramatic story, then they could do it with their, you know, the only good thing about Robotech.
Don't say artfully put together and tells a really good story. That's what they like saying about Robotech. In those words, no less.
I did not know that.
Oh, boy.
Trey's the same as Robotech.
Trey is better than Robotech.
There are a lot of things better than Robotech. Let's move on to one of the best.
Because you know what I won't lose the license to? My own shit.
Let's move on to something happier than Harmony Gold and their pathetic state. I hear Homestar Runners coming back. Is this true?
Sure is.
Hooray!
I thought Trey was taking the story
because I'm flying.
As we pre-established in the chat.
No, we established you were.
But we said we were cutting the other story, and I said, Trey, you can take this one.
I can't see the chat unless I'm looking at the screen when you post it.
Okay.
So,
well,
I'm flying. We cut the Evil Dead TV series story, but you're still talking about this. Folks, that's the entire... They're trying to make an Evil Dead TV series. That's all the news there is on that. There, we covered that
in
the show.
Moving on to the next story. Okay, hey guys, guess what? Who the Homestar Runner is coming back. Yes, it was announced earlier this month.
They returned to their jobs.
Hey, good job, guys. Here, the short have a trophy. It was announced earlier this month that after the unbelievably successful April Fool's Day cartoon that the brothers Chap put on the website, basically you sat at the home screen, everything fell apart, and a whole new animation, the first one in 3 years, happened. It was such a huge hit. Matt Chapman has announced that, yes, him and his brother Mike are bringing back Homestar Runner.
Hooray for the brothers Chap.
After three and a half years, Matt Chapman says, I would just love to be making cartoons with those characters again. That's sort of the first thing I'm thinking. And he said that it would be amazing to do the cartoon full time. It's not the main goal. I'm just excited to make these dumb animal characters talk again. I love Homestar Runner. It's one of my favorite things in the world, I would say.
I think the world has needed Strong Bad. We've gone too long without him.
Well, no, not now. To be fair, he did show up in the Aquabat Super Show.
Holy crap, he did!
Yeah.
I didn't see that episode. Flying crap!
It was the Cobra Guy episode, the Cobra Man episode. He was the keeper of the Cobra Man. They didn't call him Strong Bad. It was the costume and it was the voice.
Oh my sweet!
Yeah,
it
was the full mask too. It was like
it was everything. It was amazing. Yeah, I don't think he had the boxing gloves on, but it was Strong Bad.
If you could see the look of joy on my face right now, both you co-hosts and people listening, oh dear golly!
Well, the thing is, I'd seen that episode before, and it never occurred to me. And then somebody said, "Yeah, that was Strong Bad," and I had to go back and watch the episode. It's like, how did I miss that?
I missed it because I don't watch that show.
It's incredible.
It is awesome.
It is. That Super Show is amazing. And, of course, the brothers Chap, at least Matt Chapman, is a co-creator of the show, along with MC Bat Commander from the Aquabats, which explains why Strong Bad showed up. And we hear voices from Homestar Runner on that show. But it's going to be great to see the whole gang, Strong Bad, Homestar. I really hope Homestar shows up. because he is my favorite person that was raised by a cup of coffee.
I was raised by a cup of coffee.
I'm the captain of the gravy train.
All aboard.
That's a healthy piece of real estate.
I just want to see. I just want to see Strong Sad's Tumblr, which they've hinted at starting, because he used to have a live journal, and you know, Tumblr would be the appropriate home for Strong Sad these days. Today I listened to The Cure and contemplated my death.
I think the best Strong Sad moment is during their action movie. Whenever they would need to jump out a window, they would just push Strong Sad off a building.
Yeah,
with a Strong Bad mask on. I guess it looks like we're gonna have to jump and push Strong Sad off a building.
Yes,
but no, they're working.
How much Strong Bad sounds like Duct Tape Boy.
You know, it's shocking, isn't it?
Strong Bad and Duct Tape Boy don't sound anything alike.
No,
Strong
never.
Bad sounds like this. Oh, no, I've got my boxing gloves. While Duct Tape Boy sounds like this, canonically, at least at one point. Well, I guess I'm here today. See, they're very different. Duct Tape Boy is happier. This is Strong Bad. This is Duct Tape Boy. See, there's a difference.
Yeah, but I don't know.
I'm not saying I've provided Duct Tape Boy's voice in official materials before. I'm not saying that at Never. All.
I haven't either. I mean, why would I?
I definitely haven't. But yeah,
but there's
Nick,
no
we
word.
Promise
when
Nick has never been Duct Tape Boy. That is the one thing we can confirm with 100% certainty.
Although Tiffany Grant wasn't sure, believe it or not.
Well, you're the right height. See, I've never played Duct Tape Boy in a live-action performance because I am a foot taller than everybody else who's played the part. Or half a foot taller. No, I mean, nobody just plays Duct Tape Boy. There's just one Duct Tape Boy. He's
it's
real.
It's Duct Tape Boy. I don't know what you're talking about. It's Duct Tape. Yeah,
he lives in a box.
Mass of duct tape. I mean, behind the hotel. He smells bad and loves footing. Yeah. It's, anyway, there's no word when the new Strong Bad or the new Homestar Runner animations are going to be coming out. But not soon enough is what we can say.
When you least expect it.
I just remember him talking about Eau Claire, Wisconsin during an email, and the way that he read it was, Eau Claire, why?
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was good. Good stuff. Speaking of amazing things that can't get here soon enough.
Amazing things, you say?
Yeah.
How amazing things.
One. Can Trey take this one?
I don't want to take this one. I don't have the article up for it.
Well, then I have the new one. What do we want to start with? Okay, well, first of all, as we all know, Guardians of the Galaxy is coming out in approximately 2 days, 3 hours, 58 minutes, and 28 seconds.
Unless you're listening to this weekend, and then it's already out, and why are you listening to us and not at the theater?
Exactly. Not that I'm counting or anything like that, because why would I? Guardians of the Galaxy is coming out. It's happening, finally. I still don't believe that it's happening, and I'm still not going to believe that there's an actual Guardians of the Galaxy movie until I'm sitting in the theater watching it happen in front of me. But as far as we know, the announced date is in exactly 2 days, 3 hours, 57 minutes, and about 28 seconds now.
That's amazing, Fur.
It's going to happen.
What about Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
Oh, yeah, that's happening already. It's announced. It's been
already
announced.
Has a release date.
And it has it. July 28, 2017 is the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 official release date, confirmed by James Gunn at Comic-Con a couple of days ago. I think it was actually Saturday night is when they confirmed that Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is happening, that James Gunn is writing and directing it, and it will be out July 28, 2017.
Wow.
Another thing that got announced that I don't think anybody was really expecting was that there's going to be a Guardians of the Galaxy animated series. Just that's happening. They premiered a 1 minute trailer showing Rocket Raccoon and Star-Lord basically showing up through an explosion. Then that's going to be airing on Disney XD along with the second seasons of Hulk, Agents of Smash, and the Avengers Assemble series.
You see, I'm going to have more trouble being excited about this because Disney's animated Marvel entries have been pretty awful so far, if you ask me.
They're all tying in, though, which means that we need to keep up with them. Marvel is full of evil geniuses. Jeff Lowe.
I'm putting Fur, you get to watch all of them. You're the one with the kid.
Okay.
I was about to say, normally I'm all for watching cartoons, but yeah, not it.
Okay. I will. This is not really that big of a burden for me, guys.
1.5 episodes of Ultimate Spider-Man was enough for me to say, done.
I like Ultimate Spider-Man.
Well, someone has to.
Ouch. But yeah, big Guardians of the Galaxy news. And I don't know, do you guys, we might do a Guardians of the Galaxy special, because are we all going to see it this weekend?
God, yes.
Okay, good.
God, yes. I'm going to the drive-in, big screen. Ooh.
Thursday night, assuming I'm not training at my second job, I will be there for the midnight premiere.
I plan on eating a funnel cake while watching Guardians of the Galaxy.
It's going to be good. So I don't know, maybe look for a special episode from us this upcoming week.
We don't know.
It might happen.
If not, maybe the regular episode will turn into a special episode about Guardians of the Galaxy.
It probably will if we don't get
a chance to do a special. Oh.
Good Lord. But we have mailbag. We got stuff. We got other stuff.
Mailbag. Yeah. We got two letters that weren't spam this week.
For over 3 weeks. What is this, you guys? Come on. Yeah, no, 3 weeks, and all we got is two letters. Good job, guys.
That's pathetic.
You're all fired.
You do so much better.
We should read them.
Yeah, let's read them. First letter comes from Langland, a regular listener of Nerd and Kai. Langland says, hey, guys. More specifically, hey, Trey.
That's me.
Oh, why am I reading this letter, then?
Because, read.
Okay. Could you give me some advice on making a podcast? I am seeking to do a weekly podcast about what has happened during the week the podcast is recorded in. I am wanting to do a lighthearted podcast with little or no religious or political debate.
Then you should do the podcast about what happens in the upcoming week, not about what's already happened. Predict the week ahead, Langland. It could
Langland
be your gimmick.
The week. That'd be good. Ooh, I want to cover what has happened during the week covering stuff I did, and I also want a person to talk with me every week, too. Then maybe I could invite you guys to be guests. So, yeah, Trey, please give me some advice, because you are awesome. Paul Michael Langland.
I am awesome. Advice. Invest in a decent microphone. There's some knockoffs of that you could get. You don't have to spend a lot of money, but get a decent microphone. Don't buy the one that I bought because it's Cylon sometimes. Get some.
Don't get the one I got because I'm using Raina's phone.
Right, that was what I got. I'm using a Turtle Beach headset, and it works quite well.
Yeah. Okay. So get a decent mic. Then there's an Audio Technica that I like, but there are actually some cheap alternatives that you can go to that wouldn't cost you more than like $30, like altogether equipment wise. Then there is free software you can find for actually doing your recording, like Audacity. And then use that to do your recording. If you're going to bring in another person, if you can't have them in studio, in room, use something like Skype. On a Windows machine, you're going to want to pay for a piece of software called Virtual Audio Cable to route the Skype audio into your recording software. For hosting, you can host the media files for free on archive.org. And then for the website, use something like WordPress.com. or WordPress, WordPress's hosting, because they have built-in plugins that you can install for podcasting, and so you can host your media on archive.org, use that for the site. There, that's what you do. As for the show stuff, write out a rundown before you start recording, so you know what the hell you're doing. Don't kill anyone on air and put that online. Yeah. I learned that mistake the first time, and that's why the Earl McCoy show had to disappear from the internet. Now
we did.
Also, I am awesome. So yeah, that's my response to Langland.
I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sorry for actually giving serious advice.
No, that's good advice. I'd say go for it. Good luck to you, Langley.
I got nothing.
Worst thing that happens is no one listens to you, and then what's there to be embarrassed about? No one heard it.
Exactly.
Unless you murder someone on air. If you murder someone on air, don't upload the episode. Say you were sick.
That's what I tell myself every time I go on the air when I'm broadcasting basketball games or football games. And then I'm like, oh, worst case scenario, no one's listening to me. And they, you know, I won't hear me. And then we end up getting calls and like, yeah, that was a pretty acceptable broadcast, guys. So you're more likely to get it.
So that's your most positive praise is that was acceptable. You weren't awful. I'm used to awful, and you weren't it.
Pretty much. So yeah,
that's sad. Your life is sad, Fur.
I don't know. I'm working a paid radio job occasionally. That's pretty cool.
I was about to say, I thought we already established on nerdandtie.com, I live in a closet. I think I'm the sad one.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes, who else we got? Sometimes Raina locks him in the closet and doesn't let him out for days. He does do his most posts on the internet, though, during that time, so we encourage it.
That's also true. Hey, speaking of, I got nothing. I have no...
Segue. I want to hear your segue.
This is my segue. It has two wheels, and it was invented by Dean Kamen.
Boo!
So, who else would write to us but the perennial writer in her, our good friend Archimius.
Woohoo!
Who has sent us Battle for the Holy Grail in the subject line.
I dysentery.
I am Arthur, King of the Britons. No. Hi, nerds who wear ties.
Arthur, King of the Britons, and I've come seeking men. Sorry, I was in spam a lot. Had to happen.
We know that Fur is really into looking for men.
Oh, yeah.
A few good
Nick,
ones.
Continue reading.
Anyway,
this episode's getting far too silly.
As Nick can tell you, I am a crazy huge fan of the Fate's Day Night franchise, as well as everything the company Type Moon puts out.
I know what none of this is.
I've heard of Fate's Day. I recognize some of those symbols.
The Fate series is this weird fantasy modern anime series that was actually based on an H game, believe it or not. Kind of crazy.
You know what's funny? Watching people react to Dramatical Murder who don't know that it was based off of an H game. They're just good friends. They're not just good friends. Keep watching.
Anyway, with the announcement of two new entries in the series, an OVA of the Unlimited Blade Works storyline, and a movie adaptation of Heaven's Feel, it's got my inner fanboy all excited. For those unfamiliar with the series, basically, legendary historical figures are summoned to partake in a battle royale for the granddaddy of them all, the Holy Grail. I'd say cue Monty Python skit, but for already
did. We already did it.
It's a pretty awesome premise and has created some really awesome shows. Anyway, my question to you guys tonight is, what historical or legendary heroes would you like to see fight it out?
Huh.
I'd like to first apologize for making it sound like Archimedes is some weird deviant just because this series has some roots less than...
Look, he said his inner fanboy was all excited. Look, I'm just saying that he made it weird before you ever said anything.
Anyway. I'm sorry, Archimedes.
Historical figures we'd like to see duke it out. I'd like to see John F. Kennedy fight with Odin. Not the Norse god, but the war chief who the Norse god was based on. Who's whatever BC Russia. That guy fight JFK. That would be funny.
I really want to see Teddy Roosevelt fight everybody, because he would win.
I want to watch Taft fight a ham sandwich.
Well, everyone knows I was getting this.
I just got the best image in my head, Trey. Thank you.
Well, my vote is because everyone knows that I love Genghis Khan because he was a Mongol. But I want to see Genghis Khan fight Norman Rockwell. If for no other reason than I just want to see Norman Rockwell get beat up.
You know, over 40% of all historical figures are based on real people.
Oh, yeah? those are good numbers for that, yeah. This is what happens when we have an episode go way longer
when
than
we go past an hour and 15 minutes. We go weird. That's what happens every time. We hit hour 15 and we go insane.
If you have anything you'd like to send us, please do at go to nerdandtie.com, click on the contact form, and send us anything that's on your mind. We want to hear from you. We'll probably read your letter on air, unless it's dumb, in which case we probably won't.
No, we'll definitely read it on air if it's dumb. What are you talking about? Have you heard the letters people write to us? I love all of you. I love all you listeners. You're great people. You're wonderful people.
Just keep sending us letters.
But there was that one guy in that Kickstarter. anyways, so moving on to the final portion of the show, the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. The Vomit Hat Steve Challenge is a very important thing where I read a portion of a random book and you guess what it is between episodes. It's very exciting. And what happens if you get it right? Well, if you write in and with the right answer, you get included in the Hall of Awesome. The Hall of Awesome is posted on our website. If you just go to the link that says Hall of Awesome on every page of the website. And also, during the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge segment of the show, we read your name aloud that you wrote in with your guests. So the four people who are currently in the Hall of Awesome who have guessed the books right historically are Archimize, Zero, Raina Innocenti, and Cheesy McDamu. These are all the preferred names that these people use. If you meet them on the street, you must refer to Cheesy McDamu as Cheesy McDamu. It's been 3 weeks and no one guessed this the book, so I'm going to let it retire. The last book I read was, in fact, Mr. Scott's Guide to the Enterprise.
That was a gimme, everybody. Shame on you.
By Shane Johnson. It is one of the several Star Trek reference books which are not canonical, written by Shane Johnson. They were licensed but then deemed invalid. It's the Guide to the Enterprise A. Which is, you know.
Wait a minute. Mr. Scott didn't really write it?
No. For one thing, he hasn't been born yet. Dude.
Anyways,
since that one I don't think anyone's going to find out, we're going to move on to this installment of the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. And I always select the book ahead of time, but I don't know what I'm going to read until I open up the book. Because I open to a random page and read a chapter, or read a paragraph or a few sentences. So, here we go. When they returned to the ship, Farter Koram and John Fa and the other leaders spent a long time in conference in the saloon, and Lyra went to her cabin to consult the alethiometer. Within 5 minutes, she knew exactly where the bear's armor was and why it would be difficult to get it back. If you can tell me what book that was, go to nerdandtie.com, click on the contact form, and write in the title and author of the book. If you get it right, you get included in the Hall of Awesome. You'll get listed on our site. We'll mention you every episode. We will sing your name in song with the warriors of old. Just get to it.
We haven't actually sung anyone's name in song.
Well, maybe you haven't. Nick, you would know these things if you called in for the pre-show. Fur and I do that like every fortnight.
And we just hang out and talk and go over our lives. And I ask him what he had for lunch, and he asked me how work went. And
then we talk about how we don't really like you and how we just hang out with you because we think Raina's really cool.
And how sometimes I like to pretend that Nick actually is Raina. when stuff is happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, kid from Home Movies.
Stop. This whole thing has gone entirely too silly.
Oh, God. We have gone to weird places.
Then let's get out of here before it's too late. Nick, get us away from here fast.
Oh, God, an hour and a half?
Until next Fortnite, or more likely, until after we've seen Guardians of the Galaxy, I'm Nick Izumi.
I'm Professor Fur.
And I'm Trey Dorn.
Have a good night, everybody. Keep on Spocking in the free world.
And remember to subscribe to us through the iTunes Store or through Stitcher.com, which you can also download the Stitcher app for iOS and Android and listen to us there. Please rate and review this podcast, because if you don't, we become sad monkeys.
Or if you want to write to us and ask specifically, you know the password, Trey will write out an entire manuscript and perform the whole episode with hand puppets.
No. All right, let's run away.